Today on Talk About That, John is fed up with fake injuries and tries to convince me to listen to the Hamilton soundtrack before seeing the play. Meanwhile, I take a risk with my opening joke at a show and also take issue with a popular Christmas song. Plus, John shares some insights he learned about Black history at Colonial Williamsburg. Today's episode is not sponsored by Combination Locks. If you're over 40, you might want to keep a hacksaw handy. Let's go.
It's another Monday. Another episode of Talk About That. My good friend, Johnny. I am John. And here we are. What's up, bro?
We're here. Yeah, audio. Man. Audio only today.
Audio only today. We're going to take a little break today for the video.
Maybe I shouldn't have leaked that.
Right. Yeah, all 40 of you who go to that YouTube channel are going to be so upset.
Well, I think we started as an audio podcast, and so then we tried to move into video, and then so like people just have been reluctant to join us in the video world. Well, but the clips have been good.
To be clear, the main reason is to get clips, video clips, yeah, from social media. But even like that, we can still clip audio and have video things, but we're taking a break.
A sabbatical.
We're back in my office, which is where we used to record.
Yeah.
You're back on the leather couch. Oh, I'm back in the nice chair because we were sitting at that
table.
Got
all your many, many awards around you.
And a bunch of my wife's clothes.
Yeah, what's going on there?
This is a pastor thing. Like, she loans clothes to people.
Okay.
And one of our friends, who is a listener who will know this, was going on a trip abroad, I believe, to the same place in Cancun.
Did you just call somebody abroad? Hey, this lady carries Lars Lennon close to abroad. She goes to church here. No, stop it.
A trip abroad. And went to that, I think, same place in Cancun that you went with Curry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so she was borrowing some clothes because we're in community together and those kinds of things.
LeBlanc.
But what I have discovered over the years is the clothes never get returned directly to Laura. And often it's shoes. They get returned to Laura's husband's office.
This is like a staging area.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And Sadie, too. Like, when you know, she's getting hand-me-downs, or she's giving hand-me-downs when she was little, and they grow out of things, and you pass it around to different kids at church at different ages. And the clothes always end up back here as like a depository.
Would it be repository?
The book deposit. They're depositing it here, and I'm holding
That's a different thing.
It's a totally different
thing. A book suppository sounds really painful, by the way.
If your doctor orders that.
That is way too much fiber for anybody.
Listen, you can't learn that way.
Knowledge
does not absorb.
It doesn't go in that end.
The whole osmosis of knowledge is.
I read 12 books a month, and I got to tell you, it is rough. It's like the steps.
We're a very lowbrow podcast.
But it is. It's like the steps. Like, men are famous for putting something on the steps that I want to carry upstairs, and then it just, you walk past it a million times. That's right. What this is. It's that version of that. The clothes just hanging on the.
Well, they were sitting on the couch or lying. They were laying.
I'm never good at the laying, lying.
A person lies and a thing lays. That's what it is. So,
and animals low. The cattle are lowing.
So
what does that mean? The cattle are lowing. What are they doing?
They're making noise. That's their bleating, and they're not bleating. They're cattle, but they low.
They're
mooing, I guess.
Why wouldn't it just be the cattle are mooing?
The cattle are lowing. The poor baby wakes.
Right. Why not just mooing?
But is it, it's sweet baby Jesus? Sweet baby Jesus. This is what's the name of that movie?
What?
He prays to sweet baby Jesus.
Oh, Talladega Nights.
Yeah, so I just mixed Talladega Nights with like Away to Manger.
The cattle are mooing.
But why does Jesus no crying he makes? Like, he's, bro, it's the incarnation.
Yeah, I don't like that. I have trouble with that, but that's that thing we have a tendency to do, especially in the old days. And I think they're trying to show reverence, but it's this thing of Jesus was so much God that he didn't even cry as a baby. It's like the whole point was that he took on human suffering and the human experience.
He cried as a man. Why not as a baby?
Right.
Jesus wept, but not in the
manger. Crib.
Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Let's go back and rewrite it. Yeah. But sweet baby Jesus started screaming at the lowing cattle.
Okay.
By the way, speaking of babies crying, you're in a community group that got a text from me.
Okay.
I don't think we talked about this. So let's do it on the podcast in front of thousands of people. So the other day I'm preaching,
Yes.
And it was a weird day. I wasn't supposed to be speaking. It was going to be a morning. Occasionally a morning comes across because we're a team teaching model and we're a team worship leading model. So like sometimes I help and lead and sometimes I don't. And usually I'm doing something.
You help and you model. I like that.
You like that, yeah.
You come down the cat. You come down the catwalk.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Techno music is playing. We're just trying to model community for you guys. This is what it looks like.
I'm putting on
sachet, Shantae. Yeah.
And so those are our community group leaders,
sachet and Shantae. They're very good.
Oh my goodness. And so I wake up that morning. I actually said I was tired. I wasn't feeling well because I still have bronchitis now. It was beginning then.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you were the least sick of the staff members, which is why you had to preach.
I was going to sleep till like 7. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to sleep in a little bit.
This is so funny when people say that. Like, I remember one time Andrew said that. He goes, I slept in till 8. My whole day is ruined. And it blew my mind that someone would ever say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you slept Andrew in, for sure.
Yeah.
Even if Andrew.
It upset him for his whole day that he had lost the hours between 4 and 8 a.m.
Yeah. Even if Andrew's not speaking, he's here at like 6
That's
on
crazy.
A Sunday. Yeah. So I usually get here. I get here usually around 7.
Yeah, but you were going to sleep till 7 that day.
Yeah, and I wake.
You
I
get
wake
the
up.
Bat phone goes off, the red
well,
phone from
sleep.
The commissioner's office.
I did sleep till 7.
Oh no,
I didn't hear it. I look over and I have 5 missed calls from Andrew. I'm like, oh no. So I call him.
So you went to sermons.com, got something ready.
He was like, I got COVID. I was like, no
No.
Like, he's dodged it this whole time.
Yeah.
So yeah, sermons.com. No, I was like, okay, well, I know the series we're in, you know, mm-hmm. So I immediately kind of started prepping. I had about an hour and a half prep, you know, and so now I'm speaking that day.
Yeah.
So I got it all together, got the media in, we're going to have it on the screen, everything's going to be fine. Worship team's going, all is well. 10 minutes before service starts, I see visitors walking up from the parking lot. Uh-huh. This is great. It's going to be a great day. You know, we've had a little curveball. It's going to be fine. Poof, electricity goes out.
Oh, no.
We lose power across Mount Juliet, something, I don't know, some,
yeah.
I don't know, I think it was some villain from a
okay
had blown up something in Spider-Man was
right.
En route, but
do you okay
at any route
you don't accuse anybody.
I don't know, it wasn't even like an event, it was just like a transformer exploded just randomly. It was there was no rain, no lightning. Yeah. I don't know, Johnny, you know, maybe somebody would be in
somebody battle. Didn't that's right the yeah. Devil didn't want what you were getting ready to bring on an hour and a half of study,
right?
Y'all ain't ready for this.
Neither am I.
I don't even have my words straight. Let's begin.
Notes. I don't need notes.
Yeah.
I need notes, Johnny.
Yeah, you have to have the notes.
So now we're running around like, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
We end up putting the kids downstairs in a closet. No, I'm just kidding. We put the kids downstairs in one of our rooms that have a lot of windows, and they can play in the playground. Mm-hmm. We're kind of bringing all the classes together. They can use the big youth room. So kind of get that sort of sorted out. Because at first we're like, we'll bring the kids up, you know. But it's going to get hot, you know.
Yeah.
But downstairs is cooler because it's, you know. Then the worship team, they're already full band. So we scrap all that, and we have no lyrics on the screen. So you got to pick songs now that they know.
Right.
So Jake and Abby, and I think it was Caleb that day, and Bethany, 2 acoustics. It was beautiful. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And like Jake at the last song, is like, all right, guys, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you, because we don't have any lyrics. Like, between this song and this song, which one do you know better? And let the crowd, like, vote.
Like a town hall.
It was great.
Yeah.
And it was just voices. It was all so awesome. And so right as it got done, I came up, closed that out. It's like, what a great day, adventure kind of thing. And then the power comes on. Okay. But I'm a little frazzled. This is where the story is.
So it comes on before you're preaching.
Yeah. So now I was like, okay, guys, what's the greeting time anyway? Take a minute. We're going to get the microphones hooked up.
Yeah, that can be tougher because they're in this mode of like, well, cool, this is like roughing it. We had the cool acoustic worship, but it wasn't planned acoustic. It's just we're going to scramble and do it. We're all going to feel like we're part of this thing. We're making it work. But then if the power comes on, they're like, well, this is
man.
Now the... All right.
Well,
it's like we're all telling ghost stories, and the lights came back on. We're like, "Well, now it's not scary.
It's not,
I don't want to hear your dumb
hear
ghost,
this dumb sermon."
Yeah.
Well, and the deal is though, he had not because the computer was down, did not have time to put that media in.
Okay.
So I'm doing this without media.
Man.
So but it's good.
Only Dwight Moody could hear you say.
Oh my goodness!
And then I had to do my whole sermon without media.
We should create a Twitter account called Dwight Moodia. And it's like, what if Dwight Moody had media? You know, dude, it would be great.
Dwight Moody's slideshows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. That'd be really long. Be like, wow, he puts a lot on the screen at any rate.
Okay.
someone who's very close to both of us, their child starts crying, which we're a church where we don't care. Like, I've seen some cringy things before where pastors are calling people out and making them go to the nursery and stuff. Like, I'm very offended by that.
Yeah.
It's a really close friend. I'm trying to make a point that I should have a slide for.
Yeah.
And I don't. And so the baby's crying and they're trying to get the baby out the door. And I've already said it once, and I know that they didn't hear
me. Said the point once?
I said the point once.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll say that again. And I said it again. And the baby was crying, and when they got out the door, the baby could still be overheard.
Okay.
And so because these are friends, I was just like, oh, wow, man. I mean, something like, I don't know. Man, I'm really impressed with, you know, how the lungs on that one or something, you know, even from outside the door. As soon as I said it, I was like,
I don't think that's very, pretty innocuous to me.
Well, I don't know, though. What it does is, it's not about what I said.
But it calls attention
to someone, and that's the problem. Because no, I didn't say something that was like super offensive or something. Right. Just immediately I was like,
I would have said, get that baby out of here.
So by that afternoon, I get a text from people that I really trust, and they're like, hey, you know, that was a little cringy probably. You might even want to apologize. I was like, man, you're absolutely right. So I did. I reached out to them. I called that couple who I know so well. I was like, hey, we just don't do, even if we're friends and stuff.
And
like,
they said, too late. We're at another church.
They were like, we're done. Like right then, they were at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon at another church. I was like, how did you do it?
There's an afternoon service over
it. Yeah. They're like, we've already transferred our online
Second
giving.
Baptist.
Yeah. It's already. Yeah. It's, wow. Okay. But they were super gracious. They were like, no, we understand. But thank you for, I mean, I think it meant something that I called and acknowledged it. And then, but the deal is, though, and this is the interesting part of leadership, and you probably appreciate this as someone who speaks to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, when you make a mistake 101, you really only have to correct it 101.
Right.
But the larger the number of people who are witness to your mistake, and I'm shaping culture, whether I know it or not, I'm shaping the culture of church. And so, like, I started realizing this trickles down. Because then they're in a group of people who I know all of them, and there's a lot of children in that group. And so I reached out then and sent a text like, hey, guys, I've already called the couple, and now I'm apologizing to you guys, too. You have a lot of kids or your aunts and uncles. I mean, you know, you might have kids, Johnny, but you have kids in your family, and you don't want to be at a church where somebody's pointing out somebody's crying.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was nice that you did it, and I thought I wasn't there for the moment. I was out of town, but I was
super
like
– offensive.
Yeah, so I was like, this feels like, but you're kind of known as an over apologizer.
Wow.
But I think that's good. Like, I think it's better to be that than somebody that's like can never say they're sorry.
Yeah. Well,
but I think you have a reputation as somebody that's like going to confront the thing before it becomes a big deal, even if you think it might be a big deal, and it might not be a big deal to that person, but they still probably appreciate that you said something.
Well, and again, I used to apologize. I think as a to an extent that it was unhealthy.
Yeah.
I try not to do that anymore. Recovery really helped me with that. But the Bible does say in Proverbs, it says that the beginning of wrath is like the letting out of water. Mm-hmm. So abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. And to your point, I think there are times when you can...
I've never read that scripture. I've never heard of that scripture.
It's Proverbs.
That sounds like peeing, John. The letting out of water.
The beginning of wrath is like the letting out of water. But I mean, if you pour out water on the ground, you can't get it back, and there's no way.
Okay.
So it's a little bit like the toothpaste out of the
tube.
Right,
toothpaste out of the tube. But there was not toothpaste back then.
Right.
People in the Bible's teeth, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
You don't want to see it.
How did they freshen their breath? I guess just mint.
And do you think there was mint leaves in the desert?
Well yeah, they had. Listen, you need to watch.
I think they're growing mint leaves in.
Hold that. I want to finish this.
The Sinai?
Well, sure. It's not all desert.
Okay.
The Middle East is not all desert, Johnny. And this shows, honestly,
my true ignorance.
Your
that there's
cultural.
Not, I'm sure there's mint farms.
Appropriated nonsense. Not mint farms. But, I mean, you abandon some things before because I do think it's one of those, you know, it's almost like an angle. You know, if you start at like a 30 degree angle at a point, the further it goes, the wider apart those two points become. And so
you let it grow, let it fester. Yeah.
So I just want to make sure, if I have friends especially. But then I was like, well, the church heard that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I then modeled.
Right.
Because it's right. I just, the next week, I was like, hey, guys, I made a mistake last week. And here's the thing. That's not the culture we are or the culture we're building. We just don't do that. So I was making a joke. It was probably a little frazzled today, mm-hmm. Because of all the stuff.
I would have loved it if a baby had started crying and interrupted your apology.
And I've been like, hey.
It'd been a good test. Hey. Okay. No, it's not your time.
So yesterday.
Let me finish this apology.
No, I could have. It would have been hard for me not to do that as a joke. It would have been. You ever watch yourself like, ooh, don't.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's
like,
the thing.
Don't. If Johnny were it. Here, and if you'd have been in the room, I probably would have done it.
Oh, no.
I'm like, isn't that right, Johnny? It's almost like Michael Scott, and that's what she said when they're like cutting everything out, and Jim sets him up in front of the bosses,
He can't help himself.
He can't help himself, and that might have been me. So we had a lady yesterday, and she has just the sweetest little daughter, and the baby wasn't even crying, but I was sitting in the back listening to Jake speak, who Jake did a great job yesterday. And she's kind of rowed out. The baby's just kind of cooing and talking.
Yeah. Lowing.
The baby is lowing, and the poor John awake.
Awoke.
I was trying to, yeah.
That's fine.
And so she finally gets up and walks out into the foyer and is listening to it out there. So I walked out there at the end of the service, and I was honestly worried about it. Like, does she think now?
Yeah.
But she was there for the apology, I remember. I said, hey. You know how to take the baby out. The baby was fine.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, normally she falls asleep and she just didn't. I said, look, I know I made that dumb joke. I acknowledge it. We don't do that here. Like, we all bring our babies to staff meetings and everything else. Like, So it's just interesting, though. Like, I think maybe that's what the Bible means when it talks about not many of you should desire to be teachers or leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the deal is, and we have that whole, you're going to give an account. And there is an accounting you give, but also, the more people that you are in front of, and we're not a big church, but it took me three layers to try to make sure that was right, and that's the right thing to do. Like, there's no, everybody be clear here. There's no like, hey, John, that was great that you did. I shouldn't have done what I did, and you got to make these things right. This has zero to do with like pointing it out. I'm just pointing out, like, for me, it was like, wow, that took energy. Because there's more people that it reaches.
Next time, maybe you'll watch your mouth.
I'm working on it, buddy.
No, I'm kidding. No, you'll be fine. But you're right, though. For me, like, because of what I do is so, there's a little bit of an irreverence that is part of my job. Like, it's kind of, even if I'm in a...
It was a part of your soul.
Even if I'm in like a stiffer event or a stiffer circumstance, it's my job to kind of poke hole in the balloon and just let it be a funny thing.
Right.
So because of that, I have to kind of check myself. And then there's the other thing of comedy where you never are supposed to just like do a brand new thing that you just thought of first because it could go bad and then you have to spend the rest of the night reeling from it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I can't stop myself from doing it sometimes. I did an event two nights ago, and it was an event this gigantic church did for all the teachers in their city. Like 700 teachers were invited. And a lot of them serve in low-income areas. It was a really cool outreach. So they had giveaways on stage, huge things. Like, one of the giveaways was like a Chick-fil-A lunch for your whole school.
Wow.
And they gave that to one of the schools who won. They like randomly drew.
Yeah.
And then one of them was like an ice cream social for all your kids. And then they gave away individual things like massages and dinners out to some of the teachers that were there. And so I'm next. And I get up and I couldn't stop myself. I was like, guys, this is so cool. Give them a hand for giving. And then I go, just know that if you didn't win anything, it just means that you need to be a better teacher next year. Like, really apply yourself this time. And like, it got a big laugh, but if it hadn't, I would have been so screwed. Like, I had 30 more minutes after that moment, and I couldn't stop myself from doing it because I thought it was funny. I thought, this is what needs to be, because I do that sometimes at volunteer appreciations where they'll give like the Citizen of the Year award or Volunteer of the Year. And I want to be like, if you didn't win this year, just know that like they've received their reward here. If you've got a reward here, like you, there will be none in heaven.
Yeah.
It's just such a funny thing to say that I don't really mean, but it's like, it makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And so that irreverence is kind of disarming to people sometimes.
Yeah.
But if they had been really uptight and offended by what I said, like, I would have completely regretted, and I would have had to backpedal for 30 more minutes on stage.
So you don't backpedal, though, in your comedy routine. You just you move forward, right?
You have to keep moving, but it's like that thing of, I would have been kicking myself in my mind. As I went to joke 3, 4, 5, I would have been like, what are you doing? Why would you do a thing? Yeah, but...
See, there's
but it paid off, so now it's reinforced it to keep doing that crap.
See, I think you probably have become pretty attuned to... which things you can joke about, which like, so,
yeah,
so this week I was in two different places speaking, mm-hmm. which is crazy. I don't do that very often.
Dude,
but
you're
like,
killing it.
Guys,
world
this
traveling.
Is the one week out of my year that I'll do that. So don't, you know, there's nothing to me.
Try to book him for next year if you want him.
Yeah, there you go. This is, yeah. So I was with Reggie Dabbs in Buffalo, New York at Kingdom Bound Festival. It's about 40,000 people.
Huge Christian music festival. Yeah.
And they have all these tents, and people are like camping out, and there's campers, yeah. and there's tents, and there's a lodge, and it's at Six Flags.
Right. It's like a whole city they set up here in that.
I mean, it's just enormous, you know. And I mean, you had, you know, Toby Mac and Casting Crowns and all these people there, you know. So Reggie is like the closer mm-hmm. on the main stage. But he also does, there's all these side stages and tents. There's a worship tent. There's a tent where they're doing like a radio thing to 50,000 people, and, you know, 500 people can fit in the tent, or 300 or whatever it was, to listen to them as they're doing the live radio stuff. They'll interview Matthew West, or they'll interview Reggie and I in one of the tents to start. And I realized very quickly, you know, Reggie does things that I can't do. And we were laughing about it off stage. Like, in fact, the second event I did this week, they read my whole bio, and they did the whole Avid Endorsement thing. He won all these awards for this humor stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I turned to Reggie on the front row. I was like, I will be saying nothing funny today.
Mm-hmm.
Because our topic is racism.
Yeah.
Now, Reggie has jokes he tells in public schools to lighten the mood that he can tell that I would never in a million years tell.
Right.
And he says that like he knows it. So he has it's a classic thing. It was in our first book. He goes, hey, I was raised in foster care. You know, my mom gave me away to her favorite teacher. You know, I mean, his story is so compelling. Is immediately like, you know, he's like, I travel the world and I offer hope to people just like it was given to me. Clap your hands for the black man. I just got you out of class. Like he does those kinds of things, you know. And he's very, you know, he's in very diverse environments. You know, he's in inner city schools and all over the place. And so, like, he then says, "Hey, I want to tell you something my dad taught me. You know, growing up, you know, and that is that all people are chocolate."
Yeah.
And you kind of you go. Like there's this moment you kind of gulp, you know, and he goes, yeah, you might be white chocolate, you might be dark chocolate, you might be milk chocolate, but man, all chocolate's good. And he's done it for 20 years probably.
Yeah.
I've heard him do it for over a decade, and they always respond, and it loosens, but he is a very unique voice.
Yeah.
Who can make that statement.
You could probably not make the chocolate statement.
No. Like, and so I'm up there like there's
you could just be like, I like chocolate. Can someone bring me chocolate?
Right. I would
I would enjoy some chocolate right now.
In case you can't tell.
You're like, where's he going with this?
What is
I think he just likes chocolate. This guy's got a problem.
This is very like, so he would make jokes while we're in these interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's laughing and dying, and it was literally, you know, so on the podcast, you're the funny guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, I don't know what, I don't, what do we call me? We don't have a term for it.
The apologizing guy.
Like I can be myself here, you know, and we can make each other laugh as friends, but I knew I'm going to be the boring, nerdy history.
Right. You're the history
pastor,
guy.
Uh-huh. White guy on this. And I was, and that's my role. And it was great, you know, and it's to amplify. And I want to amplify Reggie's voice. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he would even say, well, you know, hey, John's my nerd friend.
Well, so it'd be annoying to him and probably to the audience if you were like, felt like you needed to one-up Reggie and be as funny as him. Like I get in situations like that where people, like in radio interviews, they try to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's distracting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Especially if it's a short interview. It's one thing to have an hour-long.
You need a both. You need to be the Laurel to his Hardy.
Well, the second day.
That's a really old. That's a really old reference. That's really, an ancient reference.
Our millennial listeners are like, what?
If I knew TikTok stars, I would be like, you need to be the Jake Paul to his. I don't know.
We talked about at breakfast this morning how TikTok, somebody you knew TikTok was selling a lot of tickets.
Yeah, they were like, I wish my TikTok would sell more tickets.
And you're like, that's a TikTok it.
TikTok it.
I don't. Yeah, but. The second day, so the first day we were like interviewed with a moderator, which I'm not going to get into that, but it was interesting. Like, to put it this way, I think some of the things I was probably saying and Reggie were saying were challenging to what they're normally doing on that radio station. But we did it in love and share the gospel and, you know, in terms of where recovery leads you, the willingness to take an inventory of where you are, the disposition of a disciple, the let your gentle, reasonable, tolerant, merciful self let that be evident to all people as the Lord is near. And like that whole idea of the question is, what are you doing with that scripture? I'm not asking you to do something with it because you already are.
Yeah.
You're already doing something with that scripture. Is it, are Christians today known for their gentle, and this is amplified, defines gentleness. That's why I'm using those other adjectives with it. But is are these things, you know, surfacing? You might be saying something that is true.
Mm-hmm.
Is it reflecting Christ, not just with your tone? This is not a tone police issue. Is it reflecting Christ, though, in the manner in which you communicate and which you relationally connect with others through that, even if they are not on the same ideological side as you? You know, people don't want to hear that. I don't think people actually, we have a really great response, and people met us at the book table in the back, and we were back there a long time. But you know, you could tell it's we're and that's what we're there to do.
Yeah.
Now Reggie could tell you that you're the worst person in the world and they'd love him for it. Like, he's just he's the most gifted communicator.
He's told me that before.
Well, it's crazy. I was there. Yeah.
He was like, "You're the worst." And I was like, I gave him an applause break.
You were like, "Oh my goodness.
How did he know?"
I did tell Reggie, I was like, "Dude, don't you get tired of the applause breaks? Like, I'm a pastor. Like, if they just clapped every time I said anything, because he's so good."
Yeah.
They clap.
I think it's what made Steve Martin quit stand up. Like, back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Really?
He was doing arenas, and he said in his book, Born Standing Up, which is a brilliant autobiography, he said it really was rattling him because he would have people laugh at him in the airport when he asked him what time it was and stuff.
Nice.
He would be like, "What time?" And they'd go, you're this guy. He was like, "Oh, no. Like, something's wrong."
Yeah.
It really messed with his head.
Well, I mean, Reggie's obviously, he's saying things.
No, he's like, "No, I love it. Reggie's not there yet." Reggie's like, "Please keep."
He laughed at me when I said that. I was like, "Dude, you know."
It's like, "How dare you challenge the king?"
We'd be playing golf. It's like, "Hey, man.
Yeah.
I don't get applause breaks that often. You know, so how do you, you know?" He was just like, "Man, you're hilarious." So it's true, though. I mean, he can warm up a crowd or
no, he's got so much charisma.
He can remove what is making them feel defensive or not seen so fast.
Well, that's a learned skill, but it's a gift too. It's like he's honed it and he knows how to go into a situation where it's a stand and deliver moment and he can be as big as the moment and he can unite a crowd. Like, it's a very, very honed skill.
We were talking about, he's with a lot of school speakers and stuff, and what was the thing he said? He was actually going into a prison with a comedian that you know. And he was telling me this story, and he was like, the comedian was like a little nervous. And he goes, "Look, here's the test for whether or not you're a great speaker."
Mm-hmm.
And I never heard Reggie kind of break down sort of his profession like this, but he goes, "If you can speak in schools and you can speak in prisons, then you're good. You can speak anywhere."
Yeah.
"If you can do that." He said, "So you're fine. You already do schools. You know, this is going to go." And it did. It went really well. But yeah, Reggie, like, I recognize, because I've been with him before, and you have too, in a gym with 2,000 kids in the round.
Yeah.
And they're coming in for the last, you know, period of the day or whatever. And it's just chaos. And he grabs them in the first 10 seconds and never loses them. I've seen him do it, you know, hundreds of times. That's terrifying. Like, I don't have, I'll be like, "Well, So, I mean, he was amazing. The second day, though, we didn't have a moderator. They just gave us like 45 minutes and it was in the worship tent. So he got up and did a saxophone thing and then set up sort of our story.
Yeah.
We start with the George Floyd.
And then you did a saxophone thing.
Dude, I was like, I got to do, I don't know. Yeah. Right.
And then he duels you. Ah, oh, it's so fun. What a great interplay between you.
I should have brought a kazoo up there and be like, "All right, go." You know, but he introduced, he's like, "I'm going to introduce my friend John." And we did like a 5-minute back and forth thing off the stage. So he would walk off the stage. Uh-huh. I would talk for 5 minutes. And following the number one public school speaker in the world, like 3 times in the same sitting.
Yeah.
Johnny. I mean, I never want to follow the guy ever.
Right.
And it was like, they were fine. They were great, you know.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, he just had them laughing and crying and rolling. And I'm like, there's not going to be a thing I can say that's going to make you laugh or cry. I might as well just say my thing, you know. And I try to engage a little bit, you know. He loved it. He told me he loved it.
Yeah.
I think it went really well. But it was a crazy experience. And I told him, the third time, I was like, "Hey, how would you feel if you had to follow Reggie Dabbs, the greatest speaker in the world?"
I'd be terrified.
I was like, "Try doing it 3 times right here at the same stage." And they did laugh at that a little bit. So, but
Yeah, I could put interesting scenarios. I'm doing a thing tomorrow, and it is we booked it, and I was like, okay, cool. This promoter out of Missouri. It's in Lebanon, Missouri, which I didn't know was a place.
They call it Lebanon?
Maybe they call it Lebanon. I don't know. When we get there,
Lebanon's here, so you better watch it.
I bet you it's Lebanon, though.
Because where did you just go, and you called it wrong?
I thought it was Lutz, Florida, LUTZ. It's near Tampa. And I said Lutz, and then after the lady goes, by the way, it's a Lutz. I go, oh, sorry.
Not bad.
All right, Lutz, Florida. I don't know how you get that from. But anyway, so we booked a thing, and I go, okay, cool. And then I started getting the posters for it, and it is a Southern Gospel week-long festival at this theater.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where you pay a bunch of money. It's near Branson.
Okay.
And it's like an hour away, and you pay like a money to do like the single day ticket or the full week ticket or the individual shows. So like this is for people who travel from all over who want to see Gold City and whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm the only comedian on it. So it's all.
Wow.
So I was like, I don't know what they're doing, and what they think they're getting.
You're performing multiple times over the days?
No, I'm doing a one-time show tomorrow night, on Tuesday night. And so I'm very excited, but mostly because it'll be like an audience it'll be a new audience.
Yeah.
And it's in a good setting. Like it's a nice theater.
Yeah.
And, but I'm going in the middle. And to your point about following, like, I think I would rather go in the middle because like you don't go up cold.
Right.
But you don't have to go last and just be like, everybody's tired sometimes. If everybody goes over their time, it's the three-person show, three-act show. So if by the time I go up, the other people have done like one extra song or, I want to do that one more time. And then you're like, oh no, they haven't had a bathroom break. Yeah. And now the comedian, and I come out and they're just like looking at their watches. So the going in the middle is a cool spot, actually.
Come on, guys, that'll preach.
You know, that's where you need to be.
Some of y'all trying to
be the headliner.
Some of y'all staying on the right. Some of y'all staying on the left. Maybe you need to get yourself in the middle.
Even take it there, but geez Louise.
I'm in love the road. What do you think?
Oh, I thought you meant like.
Oh, wow.
God,
everything's political for you, isn't it?
You need to get left. Get right or get left. Remember that shirt? That was a bumper sticker.
I do.
Get right or get left.
I do. I remember, to your point of that, when we first wrote the first Reggie book.
Yeah.
He was doing
meaning me and you. We didn't write it together.
Dude, we're dropping.
Remember when we wrote?
Remember that time?
I don't remember.
Remember that time that we plagiarized Reggie's story and put his face in the book?
Half his face.
And Reggie was speaking at like Creation.
Yeah.
Is Creation still going? Creation Fest?
Yes, one of them. Okay. There used to be two. Now there's one.
It was like 60,000 people in like 2011. And in my mind, our first book, I was like, we're going to sell 1,000 books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just see. Let's just, well, heck, 1%, right, would be 600.
Now, how many people read? Let's do the math.
They're going to love Reggie. He's the closer.
Love Reggie.
He's going to kill it. You know, he's going to do great.
The book just came out.
Yeah. I was like, this is going to be amazing.
Uh-huh.
And we sold, like, none, like, less than a box. I was like, what is happening? And we figured it out. Reggie was like, well, here's the deal. Because I'm the closer, they usually put me with, I think that night it was Switchfoot.
Uh-huh.
He said, I come on and talk. It's the last night of the festival. It's all these youth groups.
Yeah.
And then Switchfoot comes on and plays for 2 hours after me.
Right.
Till like midnight.
Uh-huh.
He said,
Forgot to go to your table after. They're done. They go get in their van. They're exhausted.
Yeah, the youth pastors are dragging them to get back
in
the hotel.
And they're broke. They spent all their money all week, they're broke.
Being the closer is not the best thing for actually this book sale thing because they're all getting. Some of them are driving back home that night. They're only a couple hours away, you know, or whatever. I was like, oh, man. See, that's why I just remain mediocre, and it puts me right in the middle. You know, I don't want to be one of those guys that everyone wants to hear at the end.
No.
I mean, who wants to be that?
No. You don't want to sell a bunch of books.
Man, it's overrated. So I hear. Hey, I do have to tell you about the coolest place, though, and it was the second part of the trip this week maybe I've ever been. I need to find a way for you to do comedy there.
Okay.
Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia.
At Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah, I don't know. You could dress up, maybe.
Wear the triangle hat. Yeah. What are those called?
Triangle.
You know, the blacksmith?
Oh, I forget that.
They look like a triangle on their head?
I don't know.
You'll see them in colonial photos.
I don't know what it's called.
What are those called? Anyway, somebody's shouting at the.
Someone right now who's like a colonial reenactment actor. Like
look at
them.
Okay, you keep going.
This is what you decided? Out of all the stuff, this is what you decided to look up? Dude, so I've been there before. 20 years ago, when I was a public school teacher, my wife actually came with us, and we took a group of eighth graders to Colonial Williamsburg and then up to Busch Gardens, and we did Jamestown and Yorktown because it's all right there.
Yeah.
And so this time, Reggie and I, this was something, believe it or not, we booked this from Good Morning America back in October, and it got pushed like twice because of COVID outbreaks. So we were supposed to go in like January, then we were supposed to go, we're trying again, and this is where it got pushed to. Did you find it?
It is called a tricorn.
A tricorn?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder.
It's the one you see where the guy's holding the piccolo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the tricorn hat.
He's got the breeches on with the high socks.
And the gold, you know, lame on the folds of his jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I did see people wearing those things there because there's a lot of reenactment.
Right.
They call it, I was there 20 years ago, but, you know, it's been a while. They call Colonial Williamsburg like America's largest living museum because you're literally walking past houses built in the mid 1700s. You know, it's crazy. We were speaking and doing a book discussion at First Baptist Church in Colonial Williamsburg. It is the oldest black church, and I believe the oldest Baptist church in America. No, it's not Southern Baptist.
Right.
It was founded by a group of African Americans, and their first pastor was a slave named Gowan Pamphlet. And his story is, I mean, they're learning more and more about his story. It's unbelievable. The lady who owned him allowed him and eventually set him free. He was set free in, like, I think 1793, somewhere around there. But he started the church in 1776. Hmm. At first, they were meeting kind of in secret out in some grove, under a grove of trees. Eventually, they had a building, or they met in a barn that someone let him meet in for a while. And then eventually, they had a building. In 1804, as early, these are freed slaves. Excuse me, these are free blacks and slaves. And I've been studying a lot of Nashville history. Like, slavery is not a monolithic thing we think of as, like, everyone's either you're a slave or you're free, but, like, there's such a thing as quasi-independent slaves.
Right.
And they basically live their life day-to-day working like free people, but they give a portion of their earnings to their master.
Oh, so it's all,
they're still owned. And that's the sad part. I've read stories, like, in Nashville history where basically, they exist as what we would call elite blacks in that time. That's what the black historians would call them. Oh. They're not free, but they have a lot of independence. They may have, like, a barber shop. They may have, you know, something that they, a business that they run, and they just, you know, pay to their master. And sometimes their master would disappear for, you know, years on end. They move somewhere. It's not like you can just call them up and email. I mean, like, you're just kind of living, and, you know, as long as no one knows where the master is, no one's going to mess with you, kind of thing. But then sometimes the master would die. Well, the master always died, by the way. It's 100% mortality rate.
Right.
But that sometimes when the master died, this is the sad part, then the slave family that's lived as free most of their life would be divided up as inheritance.
What?
Among children.
Wow.
So they would leave in their will, like, well,
they're assets now.
They would have six children, and they would say, yeah, so the husband goes to child one, the wife goes to child two. And
oh my gosh.
That's when you'd see you'd see them run away to just preserve their family structure. I mean,
that's
could you
crazy.
Imagine? So, like, this whole idea that we have, and I think this is probably where it comes from, some of the lost cause narrative, even that, hey, slavery wasn't so bad for everybody. You know?
Yeah.
And there was, I think, an unhealthy paternal sort of, viewpoint, and especially in the upper South, like Nashville,
right?
A lot of it was horrible, and then there were other, like, you know, a quasi-independent slave had a life that was different than a plantation slave, but it was still slavery. And in the end, it always came to get them.
Yeah,
like it would, and you had another called hired slaves, and those are ones that didn't actually work for their master, but their master hired them out every day because they could make more money. Because they didn't have a plantation to work or whatever. So you were just basically, I'm hiring you out and making money off of you, what you do.
Right.
And they had more freedom.
It's like an investment.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. So obviously the history of slavery in Colonial Williamsburg is so different. They had free blacks meeting with slaves. They had indentured servants, both white and black. And there's a really good chance that Gowan Pamphlet was pastoring white and black people in 1776. And then in 1804, the Dover Convention met, and they passed a resolution saying that white Christians could not sit under the leadership of black Christians.
Yeah.
So, like, that again really challenges the narrative that we kind of have that we don't realize is a lost cause narrative often, that, oh, well, from the beginning, slavery was a foregone conclusion.
Right.
And it was happening at that point already for several hundred years.
Yeah.
But for the colonies and what would become the United States, it was not a foregone conclusion that this was going to be an institution that was codified into our Constitution.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that eventually, it wasn't there yet. And then, you know, obviously in 1783, it became a part of the Constitution, and they were three fifths of a people, of a person, in the way that they're counted for taxation and for representation in Congress. So, but you see this evolution of it. But the guy, I mean, his life, and there's a guy who plays him, who's been playing Gowan Pamphlet, dressed up with the tricorn and the other stuff. He's been studying, because there's so little about him historically to find. He's been studying and finding what he can, and almost method acting whatever he finds. Like, he writes letters and stuff as Gowan Pamphlet, trying to bring every piece of information he can into what this man's life could have been.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for like 40 years.
That's amazing.
It's just unbelievable. These pictures are there. This is the guy who, you know, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but Johnny, I sat with Reggie at a table. We had all these different foundations. There's the Let Freedom Ring Foundation, because there's a bell from the church built in 1855 that's been torn down, that lay just, you know, unused and messed up. It was unusable for, you know, over 100 years, well, 150 years. In 2015, 16, the city and everyone came together, all of the foundations who's trying to preserve history, to realize that black history is not included.
There's been an erasure.
Yeah. In 1776, 52% of the population of Williamsburg were black people.
Huh.
And over the course of the years of preserving and even rebuilding a lot of the history, it's not reflected.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago when I was there, it certainly was not reflected. And this is what they're doing now. And it's really cool. This is why they invited us. Like, there's I don't use this term a lot because it gets thrown around so much, but there is a reconciliation or even a reckoning between, like, the College of William and Mary, which was built by slaves, the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. They're coming together to try to right this wrong of how the black history is being remembered, because there's really no such thing as black history. We use that term. It's just American history.
Yeah.
They were a huge part of this. But when it was rebuilt, in fact, the church, it was actually Rockefeller in the early 20th century that had donated a lot of money for why we have a lot of what we have in Williamsburg today that's so preserved. But when they did this, Johnny, like, the old black church was just torn down eventually, I think, in the 1950s. They didn't even think of it as worth preserving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the second building, I think, of the oldest church in America.
Mm.
It's just crazy. And they just, oh, that's, you know, it became a parking lot for the museum. And so now they're excavating. I went to the archaeological site. Oh, my gosh. They have found the original foundation.
Mm.
They're going to rebuild the original church. And then behind, they have now found, and no one knew it was there, they began searching for it because they thought it might be possible. Because, you know, in the old days, you were buried.
Oh, right. There's a cemetery or whatever behind the church.
Yeah, the church was the place. It was your community. You're born and buried. You know, the church is a part of all that. They have now found 42 graves.
Wow.
And counting. And there was a tent up over one. And she said, this is the first one. Because they're going like inches at a time down.
Yeah.
So they're finding evidence of remains. They have now reached their first full skeletal remains. And I've lost my word here. They're going to extract the remains. They're going to exhume the remains.
Yeah.
And they're going to study them for like a year, because they're going to do DNA testing, and they can even connect possibly to a lot of the people living in Williamsburg today. And then also you can learn a lot about what life was like, what they endured from injuries, other things that you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then they're going to – all these services being held, because we didn't know their names necessarily unless they can connect them, you know. And the way they found it, by the way, she told me, the president of the foundation, she goes, no one thought this was here. She goes, you know how we found it? is it was like a 101-year-old lady said, yeah, my grandma told me that they were buried there. Hmm. And the city, or they were all like, guys, that's not there. We've been building in this area for years. And they're like, hey, you just don't get told that by your grandmother.
Right.
And it's not true. And it's true. So, I mean, it's just amazing the links they're going. And so we sat, man, I sat about 10 feet in front of where Dr. Martin Luther King spoke in 1962 in this church. I mean, it was just unbelievable. They were amazing. I learned so much from them and in each one. I mean, there's the Episcopal Church, the First Baptist Church of Williamsburg. Yeah, the Presbyterian pastors were there. Like, it was about half black, half white, and they're talking out these hard conversations, a lot of history questions, a lot of how it connects to politics. Reggie got to share his story. We took a lot of questions from the audience. Bro, it was a life-changing experience. Like, I'm going back.
Yeah.
Because the work they're doing there, like, they're doing the things that we've been writing about. They're mm-hmm. experiencing it as a community, and there was such a faith component there that was beautiful as well. So I know I talk a long time about it, but guys, go check out the Let Freedom Ring.
Let Freedom
Foundation.
Ring. I'll check it out.
It's amazing. Cool. It's worth looking at. They're on the Today Show. There's a documentary film they've made. There was just a huge article in Christianity Today about it. Like, I think they were on Good Morning America the week before we got there because they found that first full skeletal mm-hmm. remains. Like, there's a lot going on. You can look up Colonial Williamsburg First Baptist Church, Let Freedom Ring Foundation. And there's the last thing I'll say, that bell, the city restored it. I did not get to ring the bell. That's one of the reasons I have to go back. It's a big like thing.
Oh, they want you. You get to ring
you
the bell.
You get to ring the bell.
Okay.
And that bell in 2016, they took the bell to DC.
Yeah.
And when they opened the Museum of African American History.
Yeah.
In DC, they had the bell, and it was Obama gave the speech.
Yeah.
President Obama gave a speech to open it, and they had someone who was I don't know exactly what her story was, but she looked to be over 100. They rang the bell together to open the museum.
Like, oh, wow.
This bell.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a thing. And you see people in the videos walking up and ringing the bell, and it is moving.
Right.
Because it's a symbol of freedom.
Yeah.
In a different way.
Well, so, didn't you say like the city apologized?
They did.
So that's like a huge step. To be like, we've been guilty of erasure here, and we want to make it right.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. and there's not vengeance. There's not like, you know, there is an acknowledgement. Look, I mean, the pastor, he was amazing. I mean, he got up and preached about 15 minutes from a whiteboard and was talking about, he said, now this is in our history, talking about the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, and he's talking about the black community today's reactions to these things. And he made it very clear. He's like, hey, you know, none of us were alive for this. No one's blaming anybody for this. And he had this sort of line. He goes, here's the line of continuum. So this is now the real question for us today. What will we do at this line?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't do anything about what was back then.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he said, what doesn't get transformed in each generation
right.
gets transferred to the next one.
Okay.
I was like, dude, I took a whole page of notes before I ever even got up to say anything.
Yeah.
Like, it was they are deep into their history.
Right.
Deep into the process. So it's not like just, hey, everybody, kumbaya. And that's what one of the ladies who, they had a lot of opening remarks from different people who lead the mm-hmm. Foundations and other organizations there. She's like, we're not here to have a kumbaya conversation today.
Yeah.
Like, we have real questions, hard questions. We don't talk to Reggie and John about from, you know, their book. And I mean, I like hard questions. I like the real deep ones. And, because, you know, there's not always an easy answer, you know, and I think that's where we have to get, where we're willing to sit in those conversations. But
man,
dude, it was unbelievable. You should have gone. I invited you on this trip and you were like, no, I gotta go make money. And I was like, bro.
I heard that you kick people out of services and stuff. And I didn't want to. I was afraid I would have like an outburst.
Right. You were going to start crying. And I was going to be like, hey, get that crying Johnny out of here.
I'd be like, I want to go.
Actually, most adults would be like, please let me get out of here.
Yeah. No, come on, John.
You could tell how disappointed they were when I know we have to sit through a real sermon. The electricity came on because I did shorten it.
Yeah.
But
you should turn the lights back out just to make it like, all right, guys, let's level the playing field again.
I'm going to turn this air conditioning off. See, that's the thing. They would still have wanted that.
That's true.
And they had the Wi-Fi back, you know.
Oh, are they immediately start checking their phones?
Yeah. What did I miss?
82 notifications pop up.
I was off the grid for a whole 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go off the grid.
Dude, I think I could do it. No, I don't think I could do it.
We're so addicted now.
Yeah.
It's like a drug. Like, there's all these articles. This guy, that I read a thread on Twitter the other day, and it was a guy who's been studying TikTok for like 4 or 5 years, and he wasn't being alarmist at all. It was very even-handed, but it was very scary, the idea that like if I told you that there was a Chinese owned company that was controlling what our kids see,
yeah,
you would be really alarmed by that. But because it's like silly dancing videos and we slowly get lulled into it, he's just like, we don't think of it as weird. But like, I've seen comedians comment on it. There was a guy named Andrew Schultz who commented on it. And he was like, have you noticed that TikTok rewards like Americans for doing like stupid things and or really divisive things? Like, it's like, do this stupid dance. That's what gets pushed. It's never like, I read this book and I want to tell you about it. He's like, they're laughing, you know? And so anyway, it was just interesting to think that like they've sold us the drug in some ways. And we sold ourselves the drug. So there's American companies doing this too. Facebook, sure. Twitter, all that. So, but it is interesting that like mindlessly scrolling something is become like part of our lives now. So if you took it away, it would be so hard for most of us to get on with it. Even if we go, oh, I don't even do that. It's like the people used to say, I don't even have a television. And they would like put themselves on this pedestal for not. You're like, okay, well, you're boring. I want to talk about Melrose Place.
Right, can we not yet?
I know to not hang out with you. But now you don't see those people as much anymore. But you do see people that say like, well, I don't even have social media. I had to get off Facebook or whatever. And maybe they're on a high horse about it, but I sort of understand. But his thing was like, there is an insidious quality to some of this, but we're deeply entrenched in it. And some of our value is derived from it, which is strange, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is a...
I'm glad I'm almost done with my life. Johnny, what's it going to become, John?
You're not almost done with your life.
I'm so
good
old, John.
Grief, man. You're in the second third, bro.
Am I?
Yeah. You're not even in the third third.
I'm not even the third third?
No.
John, I just don't want to throw away my shot. You know I'm going to see Hamilton Friday.
Okay, what time?
2:00.
I'm going at 8.
Are you really?
On Friday.
Yeah. It's my anniversary.
Dude, that's right, because you got tickets from...
No, I didn't buy... I got those from... Jeffrey was selling his, but I didn't buy Jeffrey's, but I got them off StubHub, and it happened to be that same show, because I wanted to go on the 5th because it's my anniversary, and so I surprised her on her birthday and said,
dude,
hey, we're going. So
you're
going
to freak out. We still have this debate, though. You've not
about
listened,
whether I should watch it
you've
before.
You've not listened to the songs.
No.
You need to listen to the songs, Johnny.
No.
I've done
I want
to
go in fresh.
You won't catch it all. I know you're the guy that knows the lyrics better than most people.
I'll get it. I think I'll get it.
It would enrich you.
Plus, I mean, I've overheard some of it when Curry's watching it and listening. Like, I know the, you know.
When did you first figure out how prideful your spirit is? Is this the moment?
When I send you a podcast and I go, you've got to listen to this. Do you ever listen to it?
No. It's always true crime, and I'm...
No, it's not.
I'm very busy.
No, it's not. There's one I've told you about recently that I said you need to listen to. It's about the civil rights, the FBI, and how they launched these secret attacks on civil rights activists.
I do want to listen to that.
In the 60s and 70s.
You should know this. My wife is also disappointed in me for the same reason.
Yeah.
She sends me things. And I do. I get around.
All right.
On her stuff, I get around to it because she's my wife. With you...
I'm like your podcast wife, though.
This is like, are you though?
I promise I'll never say that term again.
Yeah. Yeah, please never let those words be uttered. No, the deal is, and I think we should say it like it really is, Johnny. Yeah. The reason I don't listen to that stuff is I choose my wife over you. So, because that's what this is. It's a choice between you or her.
So, but what if she reiterated a recommendation that I had said?
Oh,
would you be like, oh, that's two
I'd
in
be
a row?
I'd be in a pickle. I'd be like, I got to do this.
I need to do this.
Just so you know, I sat in the airport waiting because Reggie's flight got canceled. It was coming. I knew it would be sitting for a while. I sat in the Norfolk airport from 12:30 till 10 o'clock.
Right. And you just wrote, though. Didn't do anything. No. Mindless.
No, I didn't do anything mindless.
I mean, unless you count your writing as
right.
mindless.
Once you read what I've written, then you'll think
this
it was
just says just all work like, and no play makes Jack a dull boy over and over again. And,
it's like Dwight when he has the concussion, just writes his name. Yeah, I don't know. I need to do more of it.
I'm not trying to get you to like dive into binge watch something. I'm just saying like if I watch something and I go, John would like this for some of his research.
True.
You still won't watch it.
No, I will.
You still won't listen to it.
That's not true.
Why do you hate me?
Do you want a reason?
I want the whole list.
It's going to be a while.
It's fine.
You know what, listener, though? We hope that you don't keep a list of things you hate about us. We hope that you keep a list of things you love.
We hope that you have a podcast wife out there somewhere. Who?
How did you feel being back in the office in our old seats?
This is more comfortable to me because I think maybe the camera's on. I don't feel like because I slouch and I just feel like I can slouch.
Yeah.
It's just my voice. Nobody cares.
No. And again, we can make clips, which you said you're going to. I'm going to call you out now. You said you're now going to help me make audiograms.
I don't promise. Promised you, but that doesn't mean anything.
So if you guys don't see anything on social media this week, that's going to be on Johnny. But you can go follow Johnny, and you should, because he's a great follow on Instagram. You can just go to his link tree.
Or just search my name on Instagram, Johnny WJ1NIEW. But my link tree is there, and you have all the links. We can do all the things.
Yeah, man. Make sure, JONNIE, that's important.
Subscribe and like the podcast. Leave a review. It helps other people find it. We're always trying to grow the listenership, and so do that.
Yeah, the reviews really help. They do.
Go read John's books.
That would be helpful.
He's writing 10 hours at a time in an airport at a 10-hour clip.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I bet that 10th hour wasn't great.
No. I stopped and ate some wings.
There's some diminishing returns happening at that 10th hour.
I was getting a little haggard.
Like, have I already said this?
I was like, I'm sweating.
You have to scan up at the top of the page. I already wrote that.
Yeah. I'm writing the longest and most difficult chapter synopsis I've ever done in 20 years of doing this. So, we'll see. We'll see how it works.
You're
going
to be equal to the task, my friend. I have no doubt.
I don't know. We'll find out. But you can check out anything that I have done on my Linktree/John Driver. That's John with an H. John with an H. The H is silent. So
John is not.
Right. John is not. my friends would say John is never silent.
Never silent.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard a great quote the other day, and they were talking about hold on. I even wrote it down because I wanted to.
To steal it?
Who were they? They were saying something. They were like, oh, who was it? It was Dick Vitale.
Okay.
I was watching some documentary in the airport at lunch, and they were interviewing, I don't know, it was Bob Costas or somebody. I can't remember who it was. And they said, look, Dick Vitale can be a lot. Mm-hmm. One time, I didn't speak to Dick Vitale for 5 years. Because I didn't want to interrupt him. It was so great. It's like, I thought that's what my friends probably say about me.
That's amazing.
I didn't talk to John for a month because I couldn't get a word in.
Sheesh. Woo.
So now if I go tell that joke,
right,
I'm totally robbing whoever that was. And it wasn't even Bob Costas. So.
Probably like Dickenberg or one of those guys who does shows with him.
Rich Eisen.
Who does broadcasts.
Something.
Yeah. Lundquist, your favorite.
Ooh.
Vern Lundquist.
Football season's on its way, Johnny. It's a month away.
Are we supposed to be... Is this a good outlook for us?
It's a great outlook.
You say that every year, though.
No, I don't. No, I don't say that. No, I'm never. Johnny,
are we going to beat Alabama?
You know what? Here's the thing.
Are we going to beat Florida?
I am looking forward, and I hope.
Can we beat Georgia?
I hope my
friends.
There's
three losses right there, because you won't answer me, so that's three losses. How many losses are we going to have?
I think we beat Florida.
So two losses.
Okay. Georgia is the national champion team, and they played Alabama. So those are tall orders. Now, I will say this. They both.
I want you to guarantee an SEC championship.
Because
right
we run the fastest offense in America, they both.
Are they going to get rid of this dumb thing where people can fake injuries?
That's what they did.
Are they working on this?
Those games.
If you don't know this, listeners, this is just. I'm going to explain it to you like you're a 5-year-old because some people don't watch sports. But we run a fast offense, meaning we try to get ahead of the tempo.
We have a play every 2.3 seconds.
Right. So, and what that does, it puts the defense on their heels, and they can't substitute out. So right. What they do is teams have learned this, and they fake injuries and lay down on the field
yep.
so that the ref has to call timeout and they get a breather and then they can substitute people in and out.
And it stops our flow.
And it stops the flow and it's totally legal because they've not made a rule to stop people from doing
all they have
it. Because how do you come to a kid and go, I know you're faking that leg injury?
Right. All they do is they make that player go out for one play.
Right. They need a whole series of downs.
They need – so they talked about changing it and then did not. Yeah. So, by the way, if you're listening, Coach Heupel, I have an answer to this, by the way.
Okay.
Because – Ole Miss, absolutely. We'd have beat Ole Miss. And yeah. Lane Kiffin, I think that we had 10 injuries on one drive. He was faking it. And that's why people started throwing stuff in the field. And it, we lost the game because of it. They could not stop us.
Right.
So
we couldn't stop them either, though. It was a really high-scoring game.
Yeah, but we ended up losing by, like, less than a touchdown.
And we did throw a golf ball at him in a mustard bottle.
Hey, you know, Johnny, I don't
I think we might have been in the wrong on
I'm
some
not
of this.
Endorsing it. I'm just saying.
And we do the fake injury thing,
who
too, sometimes, too,
mustard
by the way.
Bottle?
Like, our players have done it, too, by the way.
Well, here's what I'm
in
saying.
In our bowl game, we did it, like, three times.
Because it's legal, let's do it to them back. Like, go, because our okay. thing is we score fast. So, score fast,
uh-huh.
and then they want to come back and try to keep up with us.
Yeah.
I would just make it so evident, because, like I said, it's not illegal until they change the rule. Here's what's going to happen. You, Coach Heupel, you guys, man, fake, like, five injuries every time. Like, just mm-hmm. get them totally out of their rhythm. Even if they're running the ball a bunch. That's fine. And eventually I have to punt. We get the ball back. And, like, just do it over and over again. Don't even try to hide it. Just do it. Just do it a bunch, okay? Because there's no rules going to stop you. Let the crowd boo. Let it. That's fine. And here's what will happen. Either it will stop their offense and we'll just keep scoring. They can't keep up with how much we score. Or they'll change the rule next year, which helps us anyway. Johnny.
Okay.
I just solved it.
I wonder if this would ever work in, like, a marital argument, like faking injuries to get a timeout.
That'd be great.
You know, like, you're losing. She's right. You're not going to win. So you just, you pull up with a leg cramp.
I think my wife.
I got to go to the next room.
My wife might have done this.
She cools off. Headache. You come back and she goes, is your leg okay? And you're like, I guess so. I drank some Gatorade. I think I'm. And she's like, what were we talking about? You go,
I don't even remember.
I don't even remember, baby.
Baby.
Just hit play. Let's.
I want to know if my wife's faked a headache in order to get out of an argument. I wonder. That would be. Yeah. I don't know. She's listening right now.
Yeah. Like, sure she has.
Now, I don't fake this, but when my blood sugar drops, if I haven't eaten, you know.
Oh, boy.
I'll tell her. I'll be like, look.
You don't have a blood sugar issue.
I do. I will have a major...
Like a medical blood sugar issue?
Well, I haven't had it, like, diagnosed, but I have a problem. My daughter has it, too. Like, I turn into a different person. I'll be like, hey...
This is like the Snickers commercial.
If I don't... It is. I get very much... Like, I'm not myself. I'm
Come
like, look,
on.
If I don't get food in the next 10 minutes...
Sure.
It's just not going to go well. Like, she knows that. So...
You wouldn't like me when I'm hangry.
I've probably pulled that card in an argument.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm probably just hungry. And it's probably true. So, it can't be that I'm just a jerk.
And when you get the food and you mouth off to her again, you're like, no, it turns out.
My wife's probably thinking, I don't need to fake the headache to get out of the argument because I'm right. And she is.
Yeah.
It's very rare if we're actually arguing that it doesn't come down to the fact that I realize I missed something major and I'm wrong about it. And that's not like one of these, women are always right. Hey. In my marriage, my wife really is a genius. Like, she's a genius, Johnny. And I know I'm giving all the power away, but... What's the point? Like, wouldn't I just be better to recognize that? Like, she's pretty much right about everything.
I think you're both wrong and I'm right.
It's a little...
How about that?
If we had you in the arguments, it would change things.
Right. That'd be a weird marriage.
Yeah. I'd be like, hey, hold on, so I'm going to get Johnny on speakerphone. Is he your counselor? Nope.
He just does this sometimes.
You know, listener, we appreciate that you do this sometimes as well.
Even if this is the last time.
Yeah, if you're like, this went too far.
Yeah, I did.
And
that's okay.
I don't want to hear this anymore. But if you do want to hear this anymore, hey, go check out.
Talk about that podcast.com.
Absolutely.
All the archived episodes are there for you. A lot of you are taking road trips. Let's binge this thing.
Yeah,
let's do this. You need hours and hours of showers for pennies a day. That's an old commercial for natural gas. But instead of that, it's podcasts.
And if your kid has a device, and maybe they don't even like listening to podcasts, go and download some sort of podcast app, have them subscribe, and just start pushing download on it a bunch of
times. Get a click farm going on our behalf.
Yeah.
And we will compensate you by keeping and making these things. We're going to keep the content coming. Yeah.
We do have official exciting news that's not, I mean, it's in motion.
Okay. The wheels and, are...
Like, I will say this, there have been...
We're efforting.
There's paperwork involved. How about that?
Oh.
But I'm not ready to announce it yet.
Okay.
But something to announce, hopefully, in the next... I'd say next month or so, we'll be announcing some stuff.
Cool. Stay tuned, listeners. Yeah. Edge of their seats.
Edge of your seats. And we'll try to keep you on the edge of your seat again next week on...
Talk about that.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
And we're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in everyday settings.
The word kynos means new, and that's exactly what we want to do on our podcast, bring something new from what is old in our faith.
And on this show, you might hear us explore topics like what the Bible has to say about student loan forgiveness, discuss how the Satanic Temple affects our view of religious liberty in America, or even question why is it that so many people are having rapture anxiety.
To learn more about the podcast, go to lifeaudio.com.